Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast. Here we interview successful people who are living a life filled with adventure, excitement, and fun. Learn where they've been. Explore where they are going. See what gets them out of bed in the morning. Find out what drives them. We will go through their lowest points. We will look at the opportunities and possibilities that are now presenting to them. Come on a journey of ignition. I'm your host, Leanne Blaney. For more information, go to ignitepodcast.com. Let's ignite. Deborah Hill is a business strategist and coach who excels at getting under the hood of her clients' businesses. She has a special knack for uncovering core business drivers, and she has made it her mission to enable entrepreneurs to step out confidently and grow a profitable business they love. With over 25 years in corporate, Deborah brings a wealth of business acumen to the table. She is passionate about enabling her clients to succeed and sees her roles as someone to ease the journey. Deborah is a lucky dyslexic with an inherent empathy for those who need to march to the beat of their own drum. Hi, Deborah. Welcome to the Ignite Your Life podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm really excited to share your story. So shall we get started?
Yes, let's go.
Excellent. All right. So do you want to tell us where you are now? What's actually happening for you right now?
Right now, I'm sitting actually in my office in Auckland, New Zealand. And I've just had a fabulous weekend because on Sunday, three things happened. One, my nephew was christened. And that was lovely because his father is Tongan. So it was a Tongan Methodist ceremony, which was beautiful. And then my husband's sister got engaged. So we went to an engagement party. And we finished off Sunday with a celebration at a 40th wedding anniversary. Wow. So it was just a fabulous weekend of people taking different directions and moving in different places and meeting people that were new and people that we'd seen before. It was just lovely, just a lovely weekend.
Oh, beautiful. Lots of celebrations then. I love that. So do you want to tell us about your business? What do you actually do?
What I do. So I'm a business coach and strategist, and I work with people who want to build a profitable business that they love. But most of the time is actually working with people that are ready and wanting to make a huge change in their life. And that's for a whole heap of reasons. So, you know, it could be that they've been stuck in a 9-to-5 corporate job for ages and they've just had enough of it and it just doesn't fill their soul anymore. Or it could be that they're a person who wants to do something different with their life. They've arrived at like a turning point in their life and they've looked back and said, you know what, I want to do something different from now. I want to actually do something different with my life. I've got these dreams, I've never done them, and they're feeling unfulfilled. And the 9-to-5 isn't the problem. It's more about what they want to achieve in their life. And sometimes, to be honest with you, it's necessity. So they've reached a time in their career or their life where they are older, you know, they're 55 plus, and getting a job back in corporate and where they were is just not happening anymore. They've been made redundant and they feel superfluous. So they say, well, what can I do? What can I do to build a life for me that enables me to be what I want to be and live how I want to live? So they're the type of people I work with.
Yeah, I love that because I've come across a lot of, especially women, I suppose, that's who a lot of my clients are, who, as you say, you know, where they were working, it doesn't fill their soul anymore and they don't want to stay there working till retirement. They just want to do something else, you know, that really does make their heart sing. So I love that. It's such an important thing for people to realise that they can do that.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. And the interesting thing is when you talk to those people, you know, something has happened in their life and sometimes it doesn't seem big at the time. You know, somebody dies or somebody says something or they have an upset. It doesn't necessarily have to be something catastrophic either. Sometimes it can be a little thing. I worked with a lady last year who her catalyst was she had a car accident and she wasn't actually really hurt. The car was a write-off. She was very lucky. Airbags went off. All the right things happened. And nobody was hurt on the other side. As she said, all I lost was my car. And it was only written off because the engine was damaged. It was too expensive to repair. The bodywork wasn't actually that bad. But she said, after the accident, I thought, well, I've come all this way to this point And I've not actually lived life. So, you know, sometimes it's not exactly what you think. You know, it's not necessarily a you know, mind-altering thing that can make you want to change. Some things are more subtle than that.
So true. So what's your story? Where have you actually been to get to this point?
Where have I come from? It's a good story, isn't it? So I spent over 20 years in corporate, and I was a specialist, an architect in the information technology sector, and I specialised in the integration of new technologies. And in telecommunications, some of that's leading edge. So how did I get there? Well, I started with a philosophy degree in university. So, you know, that's a bit of a stretch getting into IT. The fact of the matter is, despite what people used to say to me, oh, Deb, you're really, really good at solving problems. What I'm really passionate about is seeing people succeed. So seeing people get outcomes, to overcome hurdles, and to get to an outcome that they want to be at. That's what I love to do. I love helping people succeed. Why am I like that? Well, it's a good question too. Thought about it. Don't necessarily have all the answers. I was really sick as a child. In fact, my parents were told I wouldn't survive to toddler. Got to toddler, then they said she won't get to school, got to school, and they said, well, she'll never be a teenager. So I was up against it all the time. I'm a severe chronic asthmatic. I wheezed and was blue until I turned about 14, and steroids came into my life. So when I was, I don't know, not very old, I can't remember when, but, you know, my childhood memory is quite clear about it. My granddad actually sat me down at one point and said, Deb, you've got a choice, you know. You can say, poor me, and be a victim, or you can live your life, but you can't do both. You can't do both. And I think that was at a time when I didn't want to go to school because school was tiring, and I was only about, I think, 8 or 9 at the time. And I thought, well, here's a way for me to get out of school, and because I could, right? And so they sat me down, and he had that conversation with me. And it's probably a good thing. It stuck in my head. So I've sort of had to battle. I'm also dyslexic. I know, I got two things. I'm dyslexic, but I'm a major dyslexic in that I have a problem with letters, numbers, and symbols. I have the works. It runs in my family. So I've had to find a way to live life, and I managed to do it at corporate level and exec level with what some people would see as a disability, but I never saw it as a disability. Because it runs in my family. You know, my brother's dyslexic, what nieces and nephews that are dyslexic. I suppose I embraced the good things about that, found ways to cope, innovative in the way I work and work with people. So I'm just used to, I suppose, battling on. Does that make sense to you?
Definitely, yeah.
So challenges come along and I look at them and go, right, how do I get around this? You know, how do I get around it? How do I get over it? How do I get through it? And I've done that all my life. So when I'm working with people, that's what I'm looking at. You know, if they come to me with a problem, whether it's, you know, their attitude or their mindset, or it's a physical problem, like how do I get my name out there? I'm asking, okay, how do we do that? How do we get around that? How do we get through that? How do we get? It's just what I am.
Great questions, though, to ask yourself, isn't it? That's something that we don't often do until later on, but you've done it early, asking yourself those great questions and then trying to find the solution for it. I love that.
Yeah, and the thing is, and people say that to me, you know, you're not scared of failing. I'm not scared of failing because you know what? Failing for me is not fatal. I'm not going to die. Now, if I was going to die, I'd already be dead, right? So I'm here, therefore failure is not fatal. But, you know, I won't learn something unless I try it. And if failure is not fatal and I can manage the outfall, then, okay, let's try this. And I've always been a bit like that. So failure to me is just a first attempt in learning. You know, tweak and repeat. That's how I look at it. I look at life as tweak and repeat. Find what works, do it. See if you can make it better. If it doesn't work, how can you fix it and make it better? And if it's not for you, then walk away, find something else. That's how I look at life.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to use that on my clients because I often talk about to them, it's not failing. It is just feedback or learnings, that sort of thing that we all get taught in our arena. that, you know, failure is only feedback, but I love that tweak and repeat. So I'm going to, you know, put that one out there to them.
I call it the magic sauce. You know, some of my clients go, this didn't work, this didn't. And I go, yay, it didn't work, but let's look at why it didn't work. Let's tweak and repeat. Let's find the magic in it. And that's what you have to, I mean, we did that as kids and we forget that, don't we? Mm. Now, when we were kids, we learned to ride a bike. You know, what happens when you ride a bike? You fall off. It's part of learning to ride a bike. What do? Somebody patted you on the head, kissed your knee, put you back on the bike and you rode again. Somehow, as we get older, we get scared of falling off the bike, even though it's not going to kill us, right? Yeah, we might get a skinned knee. We get scared of that, and that's part of the challenge as an adult, you know, to actually stand back and ask yourself sometimes, you know, what's the worst can happen here? Mm. And then ask yourself, when you hear, you know, when your voice of a voice says, oh, you can look a real fool, because that's often what we think, isn't it? Oh, someone looks stupid. Then ask yourself, if someone looks stupid, who's going to care about that? Because you know what? The people that really matter don't care. You know, if you've done your best, if you've made a true effort, if you're not trying to be an absolute idiot, if, I mean, if that's what you're setting out to do, most people will, you know, as I said, pat you on the head, just like you when you're a kid, they'll pat you on the head because you need to say, get out there and do it again. That's what you need.
Well done for trying. So getting putting yourself out there.
Like. Well done for trying. Yeah.
So what was the tipping point for change then from going from corporate world into your own business?
Two things happened in my life and they happened about the same time, which made me take a major breath in. The first thing was that I had been on steroids for many years, and one of the rare things that can happen if you're a long-term steroid user is that it can actually affect your eyes and you can lose your sight. And so I started to do that. So in a visual world where reading wasn't an issue for me, it's about other clues. I have to watch people. I have to watch what people are doing. I have to watch what they're saying. I'm reading body language. I'm really good at body language. I've learned to be good at body language. So that was a major for me. The good news was that there was a guy in the UK that was pioneering some surgery. A specialist in New Zealand decided to go over as part of a conference, and he learned what to do. And he came back, and I now have two plastic lenses, and a whole lot of stuff happened in my eyes with lasers. And I've now got I think I could fly a jet pie, but I'm not sure that I'm the right age bracket. But my vision's now pretty good. So that was the first thing that happened. I did ask myself, you know, if I've got other problems coming forward, what do I need to do about that? So that was one thing that happened. The other thing that happened was more traumatic. So that might sound traumatic, but the second one was devastating, really. My younger brother died of cancer, and he basically, from the moment they identified he had cancer till he died, was literally 11 weeks. It was very, very quick. And his teenage children, one was a preteen at the time, made the decision to come and live with my husband and I. So I was working in corporate. I was travelling the world. It wasn't unusual for me to disappear for 4 weeks to go to France and places like that, because that's where the technologies were that I was using. It wasn't unusual for me to sometimes work, you know, 12-hour days, 3 or 4 days in a row. When you've got traumatised teenagers who have lost their father, that lifestyle was no longer an option. It was not an option. They needed to move schools. They needed to get established. They needed somebody in their life regularly to come home from school from, to take them to places, to pat them on the back, to give them a hug, and occasionally a kick up the bum. And they needed somebody there full time. So I made the decision. You know, it wasn't a hard decision, actually, to be honest with you. It wasn't a hard decision. I made the decision to leave corporate life. And so I asked, what can I do to follow? Because I still needed to earn money, but I also needed that mentally. I need that challenge. I need that. So that's why I decided to do business coaching.
Mm, yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us. Have you had like challenges along the way that have made you feel like throwing in the towel though?
Oh, I think everybody has those, don't they? Mm-hmm. I'm an optimist, all right? In fact, my husband and I, there's a joke in my family. The joke in my family is that my cup is half full. Never. It's always full. Mm. It dribbles over. Yes. So my cup is overflowing. Now and then it might deplete a little bit. But you know what I learned very early is that my cup is refillable. And so I'm a huge, huge optimist. And I mean that. And sometimes that my husband's a cup half full person. And I need that in my life because he helps to balance my overflowingness. So consequently, when I've had bad times or things go wrong, I tend to fall back on the, okay, girl, what happened here? Let's have a look. Let's check what's happened. What can you do better? What can change for next time? Is this the end of the world? No. Are you dying? No. That's the sort of discussion that goes on in my head. So bad thing. I mean, being a business owner, I don't, even being in corporate life, nothing prepares you for being a business owner. You know, you're it. You're the soul and heart of your business. You're going to make mistakes and you're going to make lots of them. What you have to be is resilient. You have to actually be prepared to pat yourself on the back because who's going to celebrate for you? Nobody probably. You've got to celebrate for yourself. So you've got to learn to be self-reliant. And you've got to learn to, you know, have a tribe. You know, I need people to tell me sometimes I'm doing okay. And I have business besties, you know, that will beat me up sometimes, you know, like, oh, I can't try that. And I feel like sometimes I've had a mental slapping. They're not physically violent, but, you know, they'll put me in my place. Because, yeah, you do get down. So, yeah, challenges. There's probably not a week you don't have one. But I wouldn't have it any other way. I love it. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely part of the course, isn't it, really, having those challenges. But I find it exciting. Like, I think when I started my journey, there was a lot of fear. But then when I realised, you know, as you say, asking yourself those questions, what's the worst that could happen? You know, is this really an issue? Can I just tweak it a bit? Will it work from there? You know, it's just, to me, it's exciting thinking, oh, what am I going to do next to fix this? Or what am I going to do next to you know, get better results and that sort of stuff? Yeah, so I think it's challenging every week. But I love it.
Yeah, it is challenging every week. And you know what? All you can do is step out there and do your best. And that's what I say to people. You know, they often say, I'm not good enough. Everybody's good enough. You just have to go out there and do your best. And just step, step, step. The problems come when you try to leap too far too soon.
Yes.
Because you do need that base and that background and that knowledge and the processes and all the things behind you to actually enable you to make that leap of faith, especially when they're big leaps. Little leaps are good for you, but huge leaps, you know, you need to plan before them. And is that any different to what happens in real life? You know, they don't send a rocket up to the moon on a wing and a prayer. There's a whole lot of plans there, all right? Even the first one, there was maybe a little bit of wishful thinking. I'm sure there was, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, to take that leap of faith, they got all that background there, and that's what you have to do. But you know what? The biggest thing that gets in people's way in business is themselves. We're our worst enemies, and if we spoke to other people the way we speak to ourselves sometimes, people would call us out. We would be put in the naughty corner because we are terrible bullies to ourselves. We really are.
Yes.
And I've not met a business owner who was not a terrible self-bully.
Very true.
It's a bad habit.
Yes. What about keeping one foot in front of the other? Like in the beginning, you said it was out of necessity because you, you know, you had a change and you had to decide to leave the corporate world. Do you now have a big vision or do you still do it out of necessity?
Oh, no. Even when I decided to be a business coach, it was with a vision. I actually asked myself, I'm one of those people that have always had a vision, a big picture. I'm a holistic person anyway. And that's one of my strengths is being dyslexic, I live in the world of pictures. I build three-dimensional, multi-layered pictures in my head. And that's how I get things to work. I can see where things are falling over or not going right. So not having a big picture is not in my life because I wouldn't function without one. So making a decision to be a business coach was an informed decision. Knowing where I'm going next year and the year after is an informed decision. Understanding where I want to be at the time when I want to retire, that's an informed decision. So always, and you need that, you know, as a business owner, you have to have that picture of where you want to go. And I don't mean that so much just in your business, but in your life, because a business is just an enabler of your dreams. You don't live to work, you work to make money to live the life you want to live. So business to me, all the people I work with, they come to me and go, oh, what's your goal? I go, it's to make money. I go, yes, but that's not your goal, is it? That's just, you know, that's just a way of getting where you want to be. And they go, oh, is it? I said, so what do you, what sort of life do you want to live? Why are you working? Because it's not to work. Mm-hmm. And you, that's what you've got to lock into. And I think even if you're in corporate world, you need to, and if you want to make change in your life, if you want to make change in your life, you want to go from A to B, and you might want to get to X, but you've got to go A, B, C, D. People try to leap too far too soon. You really, really need to have locked and loaded where you want to be. You've got to have that vision of what you want to be and where you want to be. Because, you know, that's what fires your belly, in my view. You know, in the morning, when you get up in the morning, it's not like, oh, I've got to get up because I've got to make money. Like, you know, that's cold, isn't it? I mean, that's not going to get me out of bed. But you know what? You know, if the vision is, you know, if I get out of, I've got to get out of bed today because I've got to get those ads out there because a customer could come in, they could pay that little bit of money, and part of that profit's going to go from my holiday in Tahiti with the kids, I'm out of that bed. You know, that's what gets you out of bed in the morning, what that money's for, not the money in itself.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Have you had an ignition point where things have really started taking off for you?
Yeah, yes. and the hard, you know, the challenge is to be prepared for it, right? Because there's a hard point, you know, for a start, when people start their businesses, it's like hard grind for people. And it can be, it can feel like a really hard grind and thankless and relentless. And you're learning how to do everything. But there's at a point where it actually starts to take off. But then you realize two things. One is you've got to keep the work you're doing day to day going, but you've also got to keep your word out there to keep people coming in. But wait, there's more. Now I have to get a bit strategic and think about where I want to go long term and how to get there. And that's where the rails start falling off for people, and that's where I love to work, getting those three things mixed in. So yeah, and taking off, can I say, can be a bit scary to start with. Excuse me, because you're balancing so much stuff. And there's expectations, you know, you have this expectation, you want to be good and you want to deliver everything. And you start realize you have to compromise on some things. And it's about compromising on the right things. It's about getting help. It's by getting stuff out that you shouldn't be doing. It's about making informed decisions about, you know, why are you vetting all your email by hand? Why haven't you set up algorithms to manage that? It's about finding those tools that buy you the time to do the right things. That's the critical thing to do.
What sort of new possibilities have opened up for you since then?
I think it's working with people in a different way.
Mm.
So I was used to working with an information technology, and can I just be honest here, it was very male. 99% of the people I came across every day were men. And more than that, because I was looking at new technologies or emerging technologies, they were often very young. So a lot of the guys I were working with were less than 40 years of age. So they were young guys. All right, and lots of them. Testosterone ruled my world, all right? Really ruled my world. So now I work with men and women, but it's just so lovely to have that those women in my life, that dynamic of those women in my life. That's lovely. I think I'm working with people in a different way too, in that I'm partnering more with individuals. So I was working with teams. I had a lot of teams reporting to me via managers. So, you know, when you've got, you know, a large thing happening and over 1,000 people working on it, you really can't know everybody. You can't, I mean, they have a one-to-one relationship with you because you're the boss, right? So they go, you know, they know who I am. I don't have a one-to-one relationship with them. It's impossible. So it's just lovely to have a one-to-one relationship with people. And it's just, it's wonderful to work with people one-on-one to help them grow and be, you know, reach their dreams, be the person they want to be and live the life they want to live. I just love that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it's a totally different way of working in a way.
Yeah, definitely. What about the most exciting thing you're looking forward to in the future?
The most exciting thing I'm looking forward to in the future. Well, actually, it's not to do with work. So how's that?
That's it.
Because the things that excite me, yes, I do. I mean, I love my clients and I do adore them, and they absolutely work their butts off for me, which, you know, I've got to admire them for that, because I do ask them to get out of their comfort zone. I'm one of those people that ask people to get out of their comfort zone because they need to. But no, the things I'm probably looking forward to are stuff like going back to Europe. I want to go back to as well to, I like to go to a little bit off the beat places when I travel, right? So yes, I love the French Polynesian region, but most people think of Bora Bora and Tahiti, whereas I think Rangiroa and the Marquesas. All right, so Rangiroa, you know, one of the biggest atolls in the world. It's a beautiful place and it's huge. I mean, they're now allowed to take cruise ships into there, which is just devastating for me. But, you know, it's like being in a warm bath and you've got hammerhead sharks and turtles and just fish for Africa. You know, it's just an amazing atoll. The Marquesas, most people, if they hear of that, will probably think of Paul Gauguin, who probably did inappropriate things on the island. But for me, it's just a beautiful, wild place. You know, the people there still live a lot like they lived years ago. You know, because, you know, there's not power, it's just a little village on there, you know. Raiatea, I mean, I like that as an island as well. So I tend to go for things that are a little bit off the beaten track. It's just the way I am. So that's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to more travel. Spending time with family and friends, I just love that. Yeah. I just love spending time with them. And, you know, for me, it's fun to do something that's just relaxing and fun with them too. Like my nephew was just saying the other day, oh, the winds are coming up, Auntie, we can fly kites again. Because, you know, it's nothing more fun than flying kites. I love it even as an adult. Flying kites is fun. Making kites as well. And flying kites is fun. So I just don't look at things that cost money. I actually have fun doing things sometimes that cost nothing. Like walking along the beach, isn't that neat in a storm? You know, feeling the wind coming in, the waves are crashing and the seagulls are flying and the dog's doing something mad up the beach. You know, it's just lovely. Yeah, so that's what I look forward to.
Oh, definitely exciting. I like how you go off the beaten track. Instead of, like, I was thinking Bora Bora would be quite nice, but now my interest has been piqued to those other places. So.
Yeah, they're very touristy.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's lovely to go to a place like Bora Bora and go into one of those lovely funnies that are over the sea and just luxuriate and be pampered.
Yeah.
But there's part of me that likes to see places that a lot of people don't go. And even, I mean, you're from Australia. You know, the number of people I talk to that, you know, don't know about Fraser Island. I mean, the biggest sand. I mean, I also like visiting United Nations parks, you know, the UNESCO parks. Mm-hmm. And I've visited them all around the world.
Yeah.
Right, Fraser Island's one of them. A lot of Australians don't even know that, but it's a protected place. But isn't it beautiful?
Absolutely,
it's just gorgeous. You know, Uluru. I mean, I know you can't climb it anymore, and you know some of this is good. By the way, I support some of the things that people can't do in these places.
Yes,
but you know, aren't they just gorgeous? You know, so yeah, so that's another thing. I've got about another 5 parks I want to visit. I've been to about 43 of them.
Wow.
UNESCO World Park. Yeah, Petra and all those places, that's where I like to go. Yeah, those tend to be a bit out of the way. Some of them aren't, but yeah, I like some of the out of the way places.
Yeah, no, so I'm a bit like that too. I've got a bit of adventure in me, so I like to go out and see a few different places, and I have been to a lot in Australia. So one thing is that Fraser Island's just up the road for me, so have been there.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
You've been there? Yeah, well, you would have, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what it's, I haven't been there for about 10 years. But I know certainly in the early days, I mean, don't get me wrong, the locals went across in their 4-wheel drives and stuff, but it was actually not that easy to get onto if you were a tourist. No. But I think it's become more tourist now. But it's just, even now, I mean, the lakes and that are just beautiful.
Yeah.
They're just beautiful.
Truly
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
All right, let's have a change in pace. Would you like to do the speed round?
Oh, you take me and I'll answer the questions.
All right, here we go. What's your favourite book?
Oh, that's a hard one, because I have a number of them. Velveteen Rabbit, what an amazing story for children that's pertinent to adults. You know, I just love it. And I actually have some clients sometimes, and you know, self-esteem or whatever, and I go and read the Velveteen Rabbit. And sometimes they come back to me, one of them cried the other day, oh, read the Velveteen Rabbit, the ending's so beautiful. So the Velveteen Rabbit, and I think every child should have it read to them. And I do love, and it's a very old book, and it is a children's book. And I do like classics as well, because I did philosophy, but I also read ancient Greek lit. So, you know, Odyssey and Homer is a book I like to read. Jane Austen I like to read, Charles Dickens. But I also like modern stories, and I love biographies and autobiographies of people that I know and love. So, yeah, quite wide.
Certainly.
So a favourite book. I might have dyslexic, but you see, I can read, but I have to keep that muscle going. And so I'm a prolific reader. And yes, sometimes I'm slow at parts, but I have to keep that muscle working. So I read a lot.
Who's a mentor figure that's helped you the most?
A mentor figure. My grandfather had a big influence on my life as a child and as a young adult. And apart from the story about, you know, you have to learn whether you want to be a victim or not, the other time that he really intervened was, I was, and this is a, you know, family, your families have stories, right? There's three or four about me that my mother and my brothers and sisters all trot out from time to time. When I was about, I think I was 14 or something, 13, 14, I got really upset and quite depressed, actually, to be honest with you, which was different for me. The whole family noticed, right? So it was a big change for everyone. And what I'd done is I'd made a list of all the things I thought I needed to learn. And what I worked out, you know, this is, you know, Deborah, the holistic picture and person. I worked out that in order to learn all the things I thought I needed to learn, I needed to live to about 260, which was physically impossible. And my parents said, you know, your list is silly, you know, take your list away. But I just couldn't get round it. It was my grandfather that, again, sat me down. He did this a number of times in my life. And he said, look, Deborah, this is the way the world works. You know, you're straight into there. He said, this is the way it works. He said, do you really, show me your list. So I gave him my list. And he said, right. He said, do you really need to be a brain surgeon? I think that was the one he picked up. And I said, well, probably not, but I might need it one day. And he said, yes. And when you need it, you find the person that's the best in that brain surgeon in the world and ask them to do what you need. See, so if you look at the list in that way, he said, you can take nearly all the stuff off your list and concentrate on the things that you really, really need and love. And so he was a huge influence for my life. Look, he cut my list back. I think I've got it. I still got it, by the way, somewhere. I think I cut my list back to, I only need to live to about 143 years. came off my list. So he was a huge influence on my life. And other people, business people, had some great business mentors, especially at corporate level. I've never been one not to step forward. Probably noticed that about me. If I want to know something or learn something, I step forward. I'm one of those people. So I have had some great mentors in my time, business mentors. I just adore the help they give me, and I'm not scared to ask. And I know a lot of people are, but you know what? Most people, you know, 99.9% of the time, the people I've asked have been really happy to help. Really, really happy. I mean, you've got to draw the line from being a user, right? Mm-hmm. There is a line you've got to cross. You've got to know not to cross. But yeah, I've had multiple mentors over the time, and when I've needed them, I found the people I need.
Excellent. What daily ritual works best for you?
I have a morning one. I'm a night owl. So, you know, mornings have to be slow and measured for me. I do my best work even in corporate. People knew that I probably wouldn't be in work before 9 or 10 unless something major was happening, but that I would be there at 7 or 8 at night. So mornings for me are slow and gentle as they can be. But having said that, and I wake up, you know, I do visualization and some meditation. I always look at what my goals are in the morning. It's structured. Does that make sense? It's sort of structured. And it helps me ease into the day. I'm a great believer in keeping what your goals are and your vision, where you want to be front and center. It does really help you, I think, to stay focused on the right things. And I really loved it. The other day I was reading something, and Richard Branson apparently writes his on a little card that he keeps in the pocket in a suit. And he was saying that he takes it out two or three or four times a day. Like, he's in the car, being driven somewhere, he takes it out and has a read of them, puts them back. And I thought, how neat's that? You know, here's somebody who's using a real simple way to keep his goals front and center. But I try to do that too.
Yeah, great idea. What about a favorite food?
Seafood. Anything. I just adore seafood. Absolutely. All my life. I grew up by the beach. My father was a great fisherman. My family are great fishermen even now. My brother's favorite pastime is fishing. And I just love fresh fish. Also, New Zealand is Polynesian, Asian. We have just about every culture here. And fish is a large part of that. You know, it's a big part of our community. And you know, when people think of Pacifica food, people tend to think of seafood. So I love it. Yeah, you know, raw, fresh. Well, I like it fresh, but raw, smoked, sizzled, fried. Sauteed, you name awesome. It, I'll eat it. You know, seafood, all the different ones, kinna, which is a form of starfish, all the types of mussels, crabs, lobster, crayfish, snapper, you name it. Seafood, I love it.
Do you like the country or the city?
You know, I'm a 50-50 girl. I'm going to be straight up with you. I love the buzz of city. I love the buzz of people. I like going to markets. I like, not a big shopper, right? Unless it's a bookshop or, you know, there's some shops I do love, but, you know, shopping per se, grocery shopping, the bane of my life. But I do love the buzz of the city. I like the business that happens in there. I like the noise. I like the festivals. I love going to shows. I love going to theatre. But I do adore the beach. I love being in the country. I like walking in the bush. And I do like those quiet moments on your own in a far-flung corner of somewhere. So I'm a bit of both.
What's the biggest piece of advice to give to others to help them make change?
I think to lock and load where you want to be. You know, because if you want to make change, that implies that you're not where you want to be. No matter what that is, whether it's a state, you know, whether it's something about yourself personally, like I need to get more fit, or I need to get healthier, or I need a different job, or I want to change houses, or I want to move cities, or I want to move countries, whatever that change is, lock and load why you want that. Know your why. And I'm not quoting Simon Sinek there. He's sort of saying what everybody has said, but know your why. Because once you know your why, then ask yourself, what is the first thing I can do to get me there? Some people get overwhelmed by the fact that it's, you know, especially if it's a huge change, like it's massive, like it's just overwhelming thinking about getting there. But you know what? Sometimes you just have to start. So what I sometimes say to people is, what is the one thing you can do today to help you step towards that? And often it's a little thing. But you know what? Once you've done that little thing, you've started the journey. Mm. And once you've done that little thing, say, okay, now what's the next thing I can do? And then what's the next thing I can do? And what's the next thing I can do? And you know what? If you get it wrong or you fail, it's just a first attempt in learning. And if you get it wrong, well, you've learned not where to go. You know that's not for you. You know, okay, change direction, go on the other way. It's not about beating yourself up. It's just about taking that next step and consistently doing it. And when it gets really hard and you want to give up, remind yourself why you want to do it. That's awesome. You know, just keep that fire going. Yeah. That's why I want to do it. Yep. Okay, I failed here, but you know what? I've got to go in a different direction. I can do this because I still want to get there.
Yep, so true. I love that, taking little steps, just one little step. Some sort of
one little step. Yep. And sometimes you don't want it. Sometimes you shouldn't look any further than that because it's so overwhelming and so daunting, you know, especially for some change. Some changes are just they're scary. They're really scary. But just taking that one step, that one little step that you know you can manage, is just the impetus to keep you going. Because if you looked at the far, if you looked at the distance, it would terrify you and you'd be stuck in one place. So just looking at the next one thing, the next thing I could do, what's the next thing I can do? There comes a point sometimes where you get so far down the journey, you can actually go, okay, I know I want to be there. I'm getting impatient now. How do I get there? I can take bigger leaps. I can take bigger steps. I can be braver. But, you know, to start with sometimes, you just got to be prepared to take those little steps and pat yourself on the back when you do them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. All right, last question. If you had a time machine, what would you go back and do differently or tell your former self?
What would I do if I had a time machine? What would I tell myself? I'd probably tell myself when I was a teenager not to take myself so seriously because I was so focused on getting through, especially when I was at uni, you know, get uni, get out there, get a job, you know, all those things that, you know, society tells you you need to do. I would probably say, you know, lighten up a bit, lighten up a bit. I did have fun and I made some great friends who I still have, but I probably would have said, you know, stop taking yourself so seriously and stop being so hard on yourself, you know. So you got a B plus for that paper. Crikey. Oh, nobody got an A, right? You're in the top 3%. So why are you beating yourself up over a B plus? Like, you know, because that's what I used to do, right? I'd face every exam with, oh, my God, I'm going to fail. I'm not going to get there. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to be an absolutely abysmal failure in this exam. Reading is not my strong point. I'm going to have to read. I'm going to have to write. Joined up writing is my nightmare. Now I realise that, you know, I just said, oh, get over it, you know, what's the worst can happen? You're going to fail, so you can sit it again, you know, like, what's the big deal? Get in there. Because reader-writers didn't exist in my time. You just had to take it on the chin and keep going, right? So I'd probably say, you know, stop being so hard on yourself, you know, stop bullying yourself, stop being doing a hard time. Yeah. As an adult now, if I had to go back 4 or 5 years from now, I would probably just say, good on you. Good on you. You know, keep going. You know, you're trying to do the best you can do. Good on you. Don't stop.
We don't do that enough, do we? Celebrate our wins and go back and acknowledge the good stuff.
Yeah, because there's heaps of, yes, I made mistakes, but I learned from them. But there's heaps of good stuff in there. There's just miles of it, you know.
Yeah, love it. That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for your valuable time today, Deborah. Would you like to give us the best place to contact you and we'll end it there?
Okay, well, the best place to find me is probably my website. So that's it, Lifestrings New Zealand. It's lifestringsnz.com. And you can find all about me there. Lifestrings is because it's a common term for DNA. And for me, work is in people's DNA, finding the right work. And being the right person you can be in your work is part of your DNA.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you very much.
That's right. You're welcome. It's been lovely talking to you.
Deborah shares with us her amazing story about her health challenges and family tragedy. She also gives us great advice that failure is a first attempt in learning, tweak and repeat. You can find out more about Deborah at lifestringsnz.com. For how to live an adventurous life, go to ignitepodcast.com.